This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Place to Be Nation universe, we're back and with a better voice this month. Yes, as we are discussing the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined by my co-host, Lee Shows, the Oracle of WWE, Devin Hales. And Devin, it's just great to be able to do a show and not have to eke my way through it due to coughing and my voice just completely falling apart, my throat being terrible. I feel re-energized.
So, there you go.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
Although this show sometimes zaps on my energy. We'll talk about that as we go along. But before we begin, isn't it me or, you know, I was recording Between the Sheets halftime segment earlier before the pay-per-view with my co-host David Bixenspan, and we just brought up how this pay-per-view kind of just snuck up on us. Do you feel the same way? This just snuck up out of nowhere?
A little bit. I'm always looking forward to the Elimination Chamber, so that's always kind of a date that I look forward to. I feel like Fastlane's going to be the one that's just going to be like sneaking up on me because it shouldn't exist in the first place.
Well, but a lot of people don't think there's another pay-per-view between now and Mania, too.
Oh, I don't think that's crazy to think, but I've always enjoyed the middle pay-per-view between Rumble and Mania.
Because well, I was enjoying the Chamber, too. But it's just the timing. I mean, it's been
only
Rumble,
3 weeks.
3 weeks. 3 weeks. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, the 4 weeks after the Rumble, which is three. The difference between 3 and 4 weeks is a little bit more significant than you might think.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, they would have the Chamber, and then they'd have 6 to 8 weeks, you know, usually 6-7 weeks to build the Mania. They don't have that now. 3 weeks, we got Fastlane. Then they have 4 weeks to build demand. I mean, that's hurt the Mania build the last few years. I really think it has because I think the Chamber's less the issue more than Fastlane is because Fastlane's just, you know, it's just kind of right in the middle when things are supposed to be getting hot. But as we sort of will talk about on this show, in some ways, this really didn't feel like a pay-per-view. It kind of felt like an episode of Raw or SmackDown disguised as a pay-per-view.
Well, there's been a lot of those in recent memory.
Oh, yes. But especially this time around, because I think you can't really do a lot of crazy stuff at these shows because you're still trying to build WrestleMania.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the pre-show was a bunch of nothing until they had their match, which was the Cruiserweight title match, always on the pre-show. And this would have been a night to have the match on the main show, and it would have been perfectly fine, as we had Buddy Murphy defending against Akira Tozawa. And this was Tozawa's first single match against Buddy Murphy, as they noted on commentary. The only time they ever met was in multi-man matches. And, of course, Tozawa being a former champion and Murphy being, you know, the true ace of the company, the division. And this was a really damn good match. And as it seems like all the time when they're on these pre-shows and whatever, match starts out, no heat. But then they kick it in and the crowd is, you know, going crazy for everything they do. The last part of this match was tremendous. Lots of big spots. False finishers. Both men looking great. Murphy's just becoming a tremendous performer on these shows, man. He does great on television, but he really steps up his game on the pay-per-view pre-shows and stuff. And he's a guy that he definitely deserves, you know, what he's got. He's worked hard. He's put it into it. And Tozawa, you know, Tozawa's a guy who, you know, he held the title. He went on the back burner for a while. Did his little angles. Now they heated him back up. Put him in a spot. He's a credible challenger. Went out there, busted his ass, worked his ass off. It's a really solid match. Murphy got the win with Murphy's Law. And although he tried for it at first, and Tozawa blocked it with a great counter, and then eventually they worked their way back into it out of the octopus hole. And yeah, just really, really solid stuff here. So Butterman wins titles. Obviously, he was going to retain because Tozawa's not the guy to be the one to beat him. The guy they need to have beat Buddy Murphy should be like really important, I'd say. So maybe they'll get somebody set up for Mania. But your thoughts on the match, and do you agree that Murphy is on hold to Mania, or are we going to have a extremely long reign here?
Yeah, the match was great. I thought this was actually probably the best match from the cruiserweight division this year. I thought it was an excellent match. The thing you always look
for. Not many
for,
arguments for me on that one.
Yeah. The thing you always look for in a Buddy Murphy match is or his wild strength spots. And, you know, they get one like, you know, a minute and a half in when he catches Tozawa on the first tope attempt. And fucking,
oh, it's crazy.
You know, yeah.
Did you catch that they noted that Murphy had a 40-pound weight advantage over Tozawa? These guys are in the same division.
Yes. But the 204 and 3/4-pound Buddy Murphy, otherwise known as a 234-pound Buddy Murphy.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
There's no way up here Tozawa's 160.
Yeah, that's not true. He's probably 185, 190.
Yeah. Jesus.
still working hands in the weight limits and whatnot after all these years. Mm-hmm. But and then of course the crazy setup to the top rope Frankensteiner, where Buddy Murphy was literally just lifting up Tozawa with basically his fingertips. That was just insane.
The first of many dangerous spots on the show tonight.
Oh yes. Not to mention the spot that happened a few minutes later where Buddy Murphy took the senton splash when he was draped over the middle rope and his head bounced, off the mat super hard. This was a pretty crazy night for wild and reckless bumping for sure. This match was great. Like you said, great finishing stretch. I'm thinking Buddy Murphy definitely keeps the title till at least WrestleMania. I don't know who would beat him at Mania. They may have to give him a long, than just Mania. I know they're. I'm trying to think who they could bring in. I guess they could bring in somebody new.
So that's what I was thinking. Do they take that way out where he has like the open challenge or something like that, or he's cleaning out the division, and he's got an open challenge to anybody, whatever, and then that's when somebody like say a Kushida shows up.
Right.
So if you want to bring in somebody brand new and just put them out there, off the top and have them go over.
Right. That's pretty hard to do on a show like 205. Which is why I'm sort of skeptical they might do that. Wouldn't shock me if they had like a Bud Murphy versus Trevor Lee or a Bud Murphy versus Kushida match at Mania, and then Murphy narrowly escapes with the win, and then they sort of build up the eventual, overthrowing of Murphy, a few months later. That in line with the booking, but it's Mania season. They're definitely going to try to do something exciting for a big challenger for Murphy in the belt at Fastlane. Or they might have a number one contenders match at Fastlane, for Mania. They could do that. So, but I think they'll try to scrounge something up to make it interesting for Mania.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll definitely see on that one. So that's the only pre-show match we had. After this, we had Kevin Owens sending in a video. Last on Raw, he was bowling. And tonight he was eating
pizza. He bowled a
pizza.
Gutter ball, by the way.
Yeah, bowled a gutter ball. And tonight he was eating pizza with pineapple on it and was correct in his assessment that pineapple does not belong on pizza.
Well, so, you're wrong, but, you know.
No, I'm correct.
Let's not have that argument. Pineapple is very good on pizza. Do not listen to Chris.
No.
Or Kevin Owens.
But, you know, they made it seem like he was going to show up tonight. Do you think that this was kind of heavy-handed in a way? That they put that thought in people's minds that he may come out there?
Maybe a little bit. I think the idea is to do this sort of every week and sort of think, you know, he's going to show up at any time. He could show up tonight. I think that's sort of the point of putting out these videos, is that he's gonna be around, you know, is basically, you know, ASAP. And I think, you know, in the first video on Raw, he said he would be back in a month. I think he said he had something like a month left or something, I think is what he said, you know, when the video first started. So it wouldn't shock me if the idea was for them to just keep posting these videos and sort of, you know, oh, you know, maybe he'll show up tonight. Maybe he won't. I think that's sort of the idea.
I'm kind of
gathering he'll be back probably the night after Fastlane would be my guess. And I don't know where they would throw him into.
I got an idea. So we'll say that. I got an idea. Let's see if I'm curious if they'll do it. But so we had that. And then a great way to end the pre-show, Mark Henry came out.
Yes.
And talked to his native Texans. Got a big pop. And was great here. Told the fans, you know, give it up for the Cruiserweights, which was great. And told about picking the Iconics and Kofi. Well, he was 0 for 2, but still. And, man, he was so good here. And I miss him. I miss Mark Henry. And I just wish that, you know, if Mark Henry could have been greater earlier. Because, you know, Mark had a lot of years there where he wasn't really great. But, man, the time he was one of the best, man. And so I hate seeing him not being around.
Yeah, man. And Mark Henry, for the first half of this decade, was amazing. And really, he was amazing for the last half of the 2000s decade, too. You know, when he came in and attacked Batista in the cage on SmackDown, you know, God, 12 years ago now. Well, 13 years ago.
And then the ECW run with Tony Atlas.
Yes, Matt Hardy feud. Yep. Yeah. I mean, he's really one of the most underrated stars last 20 or 25 years or so. I definitely miss Mark Henry too. However, though, I liked his interview segment. I thought he was a lot of fun, and it was a nice little ending to the pre-show, and probably the best ending to a pre-show they've ever done. So,
and it was done to plug this special, which
aired
at the show, which I've heard is really, really good for people that's watching it, which is shocking. Because they do a great job on these specials. So, all right. Now, reports came out earlier today that Vince McMahon made a call in the meetings to change the order of the matches. So the women's Elimination Chamber match was not going to main event. It was supposed to main event originally. And they moved it to the opener. And during the match, Brian Alvarez tweeted out, and others kind of tweeted the same thing, that during that match, there were new format sheets given out to the announcers. So, yes, this show was rewrote on the fly, in a way, and it looked that way as we got to a certain point of the show. So, now with that in mind, we begin with the Women's Elimination Chamber match to start the main show for the WWE Women's Tag Team titles that will be defended on all brands.
There you go.
We had Naomi and Carmella, the Iconics, Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan, Nia Jax, Tamina, and Bayley and Sasha Banks. Now, I'm not one to throw a lot of dirt out, but the day before the pay-per-view, it was a big kerfuffle online about Corey Graves and Carmella, thanks to an Instagram post by Corey Graves' wife. And there was, you know, thoughts going into this was, how would WWE handle it? Well, they didn't change nothing. Carmella's out here. Corey Graves is calling the match. So, and that's that. So, he really didn't talk about it that much. He was doing his lusting over Mandy Rose, which he always does in storyline. So, that's that. But, interesting that everything was status quo here and would be status quo in another match as well, which we'll talk about. But, this match. As you know, if you listen to these shows that we do, we always love the women's matches, mainly. Especially the multi-women's matches, because they can get really wild. And this one was no different. Boy, these women were throwing shots at each other, and it was chaotic, it was hard-hitting, it was everything. Was it good, per se? In a technical way? Probably not. But it was entertaining as shit, and it was pretty much everything I would have wanted from this match. We had a lot of fun stuff. The Iconics was great in their roles. You know, they got to eliminate Naomi and Carmella. I mean, hilarious. They did what they did great. Mandy and Sonya looked really good in this match. Sonya with a new gear, with long tights, so she's changed her gear up some. Mandy Rose, like, she got busted in the mouth really early in the match. So, I mean, they were hitting hard as hell. Liv and Sarah were great when they were in there. Nia and Tamina were Nia and Tamina. And Bayley and Sasha were the veterans that held it down. And everybody played their role great. Lots of great spots in this match. Counters. Everybody was using the cage well. We had the teases of jumping off the pods, which would come into effect later. Nia breaking through the plexiglass very hard. And, yeah, this was great stuff, man. Bayley and Sasha got the win over Sonya Deville with the bank statement 2.0 as Sasha couldn't use her arm because of her injury. So she decided to use her leg instead. And it made it look gruesome. So Sonya tapped out. Charlie Caruso comes in, interviews Sasha and Bayley after the match. Both of them crying. Fans, you know, giving them the big pop, chanting, "You deserve it." This was a tremendous segment. And I love this match. This is a hell of a chamber match. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, this was definitely a lot of fun. This delivered for me. I thought it would be a chaotic mess in a good way, and it was. It wasn't a great match per se, but I don't think it had to be. No. It was a tremendous spectacle in a lot of ways, like you mentioned on Twitter right after the match. Yeah, this was tons of fun. I was invested in it. I was into the match the whole time. In general, what I asked for as a fan is to keep invested, and I was. The sloppiness, I think, adds to the matches. The sloppiness in women's matches, I enjoy for the most part, because it feels real, like a real fight, and especially in a match, an elimination match, not everything has to look smooth or pretty. And, you know, it certainly didn't look that way in the men's chamber either. But, you know, the sloppiness and stiffness is I really enjoyed that aspect. Like, even the little moments, having a strike exchange, like, had me popping. Like, they were just, like, throwing wildly kicks and strikes and slaps and punches, and, like, some were connecting, some weren't. Like, I loved that little segment. You know, I was screaming in my living room for that. you know, this match ruled. I thought, you know, it was cool that they gave the Riot Squad the big diving sequence, although they didn't catch Sarah's dive. They, you know, they did on the replay. They had to catch a lot of things on the replay tonight.
Oh,
and we'll
boy.
Talk about that in the main event, won't we? Yeah.
Oh, that, I mean, the Hurricanrana spot on the outside, where they just barely caught it on a camera switch, was terrible. Terrible.
The WWE, Kevin Dunn's a fucking moron. I'd say fuck you, Kevin Dunn, to his face. You suck.
We got the
job,
biggest one later.
Dude. But yeah. Ugh, God, the production was very annoying tonight. And I usually don't sit around and complain about WWE production like some people. But boy, was it bad tonight. But that's really the worst part of the match, was the production. But yeah, you know, this match was really enjoyable. I thought Sonya Deville was tremendous again in this chamber, tremendous last year in the chamber. And I thought she really stood out again. She's quite good. And I really hope that she and Mandy are the first challengers and get a title match at Fastlane. I'd like to see that.
I don't see why not. Yeah, I don't see why not, since it's, you know, everybody can go for it.
Right. And you know, that's pretty much a stopgap show. I mean, give them 15, 20 minutes, they could probably tear the house down.
Yeah.
The final 5 minutes, when it came down to Sasha and Bayley versus Mandy and Sonya, was like incredible. Sonya's spear is all crazy, but the one to Bayley into the corner of the pod was brutal looking. Painful. Of course, the amazing finish. Sasha's got some of the most creative and brilliant psychology finish. She comes up with some of the most brilliant stuff when it comes to submission finish. I think there was a time where she beat Nia in like a really awesome way in a gauntlet a summer or so ago.
Yeah, I remember something like that. Yeah.
She comes up with some amazing finishes, that was another one in her of clever finishes. That was amazing. And of course, once again, Sasha Banks is the person that you throw into a new special thing for the women and get her to deliver it and successfully deliver it. And you know, she did it again. She's one half of the first women's tag team champions, or at least first women's tag team champions in 25 years, technically, I guess. But
the first WWE.
Sure, right. That's fair. And of course, the post match is very emotional and rightfully so. You know, they even had, you know, Corey Graves crying and stuff like that. So, I mean,
he was crying for other reasons.
There you go.
But no, Beth was yes, openly weak. I mean, you could hear it in her voice.
But
Beth is one of these people. She was on commentary for the match. Let me mention the commentary for. Beth Phoenix is one is like maybe the credible of all the announcers, because she actually is genuine and believes, you know, what she says and stuff. And she was caught up in the emotion of all this stuff that's going on.
Yes.
Because she's been, I mean, she worked in that era when the women weren't treated nowhere near what they're treated now.
I wish,
you know,
I mean, she's got, you know, she stumbles on her words some, but I
full time, put her on SmackDown. But I think she's really good in the booth. This was a great match, a great post match presentation. Was really well done. I liked it a lot for sure. Definitely delivered.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So all these ladies deserve credit for being part of this match. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Bayley and Sasha being the only champions to travel to all the brands. So I can't wait for them to return to NXT. That's going to be something. You know,
Sky Pirates.
You put them in NXT against the Sky Pirates?
Yeah, brother.
That's a match. I would love to see that match at WrestleMania. Yes. That'd be a WrestleMania match. So, there's a lot of things that can happen here with Bayley and Sasha, for sure. All right. Now we go to another tag match, the SmackDown tag titles. As we have Mick Miz, Shane and Miz, defending against the Usos, who had quite the week this week. As Jimmy Uso had a little issue where he was arrested at a local bar after SmackDown, made the rounds on TMZ. And again, he's another one. You wonder how they were going to handle this situation. Well, they came out there and they worked, and they didn't change the finish, let's just say that. Before the match, Miz came out, was pumped up. Talked about he was dedicating his match to his dad and his daughter, Maryse. And then Maryse came out with a nice surprise. And she made the big announcement that they are expecting baby number two. So, yes, another Miz child is coming.
Yeah, I can't wait till around SummerSlam 2020 when the third's being announced. Those two sure love each other, which is nice to see, to be fair.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. No. They're one of those couples that you can just tell that they are so much in love with each other, and they're gonna be together forever. And I'm pretty sure this definitely guarantees another season of their show.
There you go.
On television.
Yep.
So we got that. So, Miz and Shane came out there. It is odd, the Uso penitentiary thing after Jimmy had his little thing this week, but hey, that's what it is. This match was an interesting match. There was some good stuff in the match, but it seems to me now that every Shane McMahon match, we got to have the greatest hits. We got to have the Van Terminator. We got to have the jumping off top rope through the table. It just seems like we got to have all this stuff in all of his matches now. And I think it would kind of be interesting if they would, you know, break that up in future Shane matches and not rely on the same spots. But that's just a minor quibble for me. Shane put a... One of the Usos through the table, and it was Jay, if I'm not mistaken. And Miz, what an interesting finish this was. Miz got the skull crushing finale. And as he went to pin Jimmy rolled him up to win the match. He pinned him as he was trying to pin him. Amazing. Shane, of course, is on the floor. Recovering from the table spot. So Miz, all upset, goes out there and picks him up and coats him to the back. And I know it was me especially. I was surely expecting a turn there, but no, they didn't do it yet. But I definitely see it's being set up. So it's coming. It's just a matter of when. Uso's got the belts back. So, nope. I mean, no real punishment there for what happened. So, interesting match in many ways. So, your thoughts on the Usos getting the belts back, and when do we get the big turn?
This match was actually kind of good. It was, you know, kind of just in some ways, you know, for the Usos, it was sort of run of the mill good Usos tag. Wasn't great, you know, by any means, but it was a good match. You are right about Shane, like constantly having to do his coast to coast and flying elbow to a table. Killing the guy, you know. I mean, he's 49 years old. I mean, he's over
I
here
know.
just dying all the time. Although I find it to be extremely entertaining because I'm a Shane Mark, but it's absurd.
Well, I like Shane too, but it's just getting too. He's working too much, and he's looking older now, and he's not bouncing up like he used to, and it's just looking like old guy hanging on for dear life, you know, at times hanging on to his youth,
right. But yeah, you know, this match was actually, you know, pretty good. The finish, I did not expect the Usos to win. Not, I mean, even before all the Jimmy Uso arrest stuff, whatever, I didn't expect that to happen. You know, I thought Miz and Shane would probably lose the belts at Fastlane, but I didn't think they'd lose the belts tonight. And I was a little surprised about the finish. But it just shows you that, you know, I guess you learn that if you square up and fight a cop, I mean, Vince will give you a title. So, I mean, because I think people were tweeting that the last time Jimmy got in trouble with a DUI, didn't he win, you know, they won tag belts when that happened last year. So,
something like that, yeah, because it's not the first time. You're right. No. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess if you ever want to push in WWE, just you know, square up to a police officer, I suppose. But
or beat up a lawyer or something like that, maybe.
Right. Yeah, it was a good match, but as far as the heel turn, I'm still torn on whether who's going to turn on who. I'm still sort of convinced that Shane's going to turn on Miz, and they're going to have Miz. But after tonight, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to take backstage segment, right, where Shane was getting checked on in the training room, and Miz was throwing stuff around, and then Shane might go home, you know. I don't know. I mean, it would make more sense for Miz to turn on Shane. You know, I mean, it's the Miz. Come on. But they're going to have to.
The way they look, they're going to do it, though, is opposite of the way I was thinking. See, I was thinking they were going to do it the way with Shane's losing the matches and Miz gets pissed off.
See, yeah.
But it looks like Miz is going to be the guy losing the matches, and he gets pissed off because he's failing his father.
Right.
And he takes it out on Shane.
Right. That's probably the direction.
Which is interesting.
Go. I would probably guess, you know what? Have a title, like a rematch or something, and then the turn happens because they might try to have a big angle happen at Fastlane or something. So
yes,
that. But I mean, I think it's going to happen, you know, in the next 3 weeks for sure.
Yeah, because I think they're definitely going to have a match with me.
Right. Absolutely.
So. All right, and who with Dovey with the SmackDown tag titles? Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows where we go after the Usos?
I have no clue.
So. I'm hoping Otis and Tucker.
Yes. Yes.
Who had an interesting little deal with the bar on the pre-show, and yes, Jimmy Uso and the bar jokes. Yes. if they wrestle Cesaro and Sheamus on television, get ready for all that.
Right.
All right. Next, we get an interesting match. Handicap match for Intercontinental title, which I never like. Handicap matches for singles belts. As Finn Balor went against Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush. And Finn can win the title by pinning either one of them. Again, I hate that. This feud has... I don't know. I like Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush as an act, although I guess that's done tonight. After tonight, Finn Balor was red hot coming out of the Rumble, but it seems like they really cooled him down with this feud because the fans really just kind of blah towards Bobby in a lot of ways. This is what happens when you don't have a universal champion that's there for every show.
Yep.
Because, you know, naturally Finn could have had a rematch with Brock or whoever the universal champion could be on this show, playing off the Rumble, you know, and that would be a natural thing. But we have him here, and you know, they did give him the Intercontinental title, but that means now he's the Intercontinental champion, so he's kind of pigeonholed in a way. The match was fine. You know, it was a handicap match, so you got a lot of those type of stuff, but you know, fans were into Balor. Eventually, you know, caught Leo with the coup de grace, got the title. Lashley was pissed, naturally. He lost his belt without getting pinned. And he just threw Leo down hard and then walked out. So I guess Bobby and Leo were done, but it wasn't surprising to see them, you know, make back up, because that's how WWE does things. But Bobby would be back later on the show for another appearance. We're not done talking about him, but yeah, this is when the show kind of, well, not necessarily at this moment in time, because we got something great coming up next. But this is when the show kind of, now it starts feeling like a television show.
Yes.
I mean, it felt like a TV show in the previous match, but Shane doesn't work TV that much, so there's that. But this felt like a Raw match. It felt like it didn't really need to be on this big show like this. So your thoughts on this?
This is definitely the point where I thought, man, this feels like an episode. My brother Dustin and I were like, man, this is like, you know, Dustin was like, what, am I watching Raw? Like, I mean, they're really, you know, the next, I mean, after the women's tag titles up until the main event chamber match, it was like, oh, an episode of Raw. You know, it wasn't, none of these matches felt like they mattered. Well, I mean, you know, the Shane Miz outcomes, you know, did and will matter, but this show just I thought it had a weak undercard coming in, but then it even ended up being a little bit weaker than I thought it would be. It was just a really weird middle 2 hours, but I guess that's what happens when you're rewriting the show during it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Match was okay. You know, match was, you know, even kind of good, you know, but I mean, I think the IC title is good for Finn, but at the same time, like you said, when he has this great performance, it's Brock, just, you know, amazing match performance, and then nothing comes of it. And it's like, you know, well, what was the point of doing that other than to have that great match? You know, it's just weird. Yeah, Lashley and Leo are a great act together, and I hope this is in the end, but it sort of feels that way because I don't think Bobby Lashley can survive without a mouthpiece.
Well,
and he's gotten fairly over in the mid card as a heel with Leo as his mouthpiece, and this breakup might not be too good for him, in the long run. He bombed so terribly last year as a babyface in that god awful Sami Zayn feud. Boy, that feud terrible. And the Leo pairing has been so good for him and been so good for Leo. I don't see any reason why they would end this. I just think this was a poor idea altogether, the handicap match. I'm fine with Finn winning the title. I mean, they could have done a singles match where Leo kept getting involved and you know, and then Balor still win, but and somehow avoid having, you know, the Leo Lashley breakup. But I just, this match, it felt like TV. Lashley Leo breaking up, I don't think is a good idea. Balor is sort of in a stop start push scenario. It's just weird and just not all that great. In terms of what
they're sort of doing with these guys right now. I don't know. It's just, it's sort of, you know, kind of like a treadmill with these mid-card guys.
Yes, and we'll talk more about that in a minute because we have another one of those situations coming up. But, yeah, I mean, this Fizz never held this belt before, so there is that. And we'll see. We'll see. That's all we can say. Next, Raw Women's title, Ronda Rousey. I think it's Ruby Riott. And poor Ruby Riott. Before the match, Charlotte interviewed Charlotte. Charlotte cut a promo. Promo lasted longer than the match itself.
Yeah.
But Charlotte was great and has been great on promos lately. So she's definitely found her groove and found the right heel to play. Mm-hmm. Ronda. Let me talk about Ronda here. Ronda did her Sonya Blade from Mortal Kombat cosplay here. And she looked tremendous in that getup, and she needs to keep it. Because she looks so much more like a badass than she did with the, you know, Roddy Piper tribute stuff. So, yeah, she needs to keep this look. She looked like she was a member of T2000 with Chono and Tenkoji and the crew. Super J should have been at ringside.
She also won't be adjusting her tights all the time either. So,
exactly. So she looked tremendous. Ruby, you know, got in there and had a little bit of offense, and boom, there she goes, taps out. The worst Ronda pay-per-view match we've seen, and it's mainly because it was designated to be that way. It was designated to be a squash. Charlotte got in the ring, went nose to nose with Ronda, and then Becky comes out. Now they show clips from a live event the day before in Alexandria, Louisiana, where Becky got re-injured, quote-unquote, by Charlotte. So Becky comes out on crutches, wearing something that, like, Toshiaki Kawada would wear, in a way. Or somebody know they reverse Kill Bill. So we had all this great gear going on. And Charlotte was wearing, like, an overall-type top, too. All of them in black. So interesting look going on. Becky sort of crutches. And the fans are going apeshit crazy. And Becky attacks Charlotte with the crutches. Beats the shit out of her. Ronda grabs one of the crutches. Looks at Becky, stares at her for a little bit. And then Ronda goes hit Charlotte with it. And then Becky just slammed her right in the fucking head with the crutch. Which caused Ronda to bleed. That looked pretty rough from the side there when they showed it. And, Becky was just ruthless with these crutch shots. Just whacking both of these women. With reckless abandon. And security eventually gets her out of there and takes her away. Everyone commentary going nuts about how she shouldn't be there because she's suspended. And they're right. The logic in this storyline is pretty much gone in a lot of ways. But Austin was the same way. Security eventually takes her out, this, that, and the other, blah, 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 blah. Crowd is just losing their fucking minds. And, Ronda was looking extremely pissed at ringside. And I would be too if my head was looking like that. So, that was a segment. The Becky stuff, man, I mean, the crowd is obviously going crazy over it. She is red hot right now as a performer. And, you know, they're doing Austin all over again in a different way, but still doing Austin all over again. And just like Austin, you know, 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago now, because we're in 2019, but when Austin started getting hot in 97, Austin was doing all his shit. He was doing his heel stuff, and Becky's doing the same thing in a way. I mean, she attacks Ronda from behind. You know, she does all this stuff, attacking Triple H and Stephanie, who were well within their rights to say, hey, we're not going to put you in the match unless you're cleared by our doctors, which is the right thing for them to do as people in their position. You know, so they're doing the right thing, But it's the wrong thing in the eyes of the fans. So while it may go against traditional norms, we're not in the era of traditional norms, and we haven't been since the NWO, basically. So you got to take it for what it is. I mean, as long as the crowd's into it and it's over, that's all that matters in the end. And they are. So this segment achieved exactly what it needed to achieve. And it was a home run segment, I thought. So what do you thought?
Yeah. As far as the squash goes, it sucked.
Yeah, it did for Ruby.
I think people make somewhat of a fair argument in the sense that, first of all, I kind of worked myself into thinking that they might have a 5 or 6 minute match. I didn't think it would go longer than that, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. But I kind of get the argument that, I mean, Ruby is the leader of a team of losers. That's how they're portrayed on TV. I mean, they lose all the time. So
they lose all the time, but they do keep them credible. Right. I mean, they find a way to keep them credible.
You know, and that didn't happen. You know, that didn't happen here, and that did piss me off. I think that hurts Ruby. You know, she is a very good wrestler, and you know, I hate throwing around the – I mean, it's like throwing around the word buried. I mean, it's not going to be a continual burial for her or something like that. But tonight was not a good look for her.
She's in a position where she's in a slot, and she gets to sniff that slot above her, but she's not there. She can't get it.
Right.
For various reasons.
Right.
I mean, when she was in NXT, she wasn't even among the top women there. That's
true. Very true.
You know?
Yep. That's very true.
So
hopefully some things start going her and Liv and Sarah's way. I'm a big fan of those three. I think they're one of the more fun and consistent acts on Raw every week.
They have a place. Yes. They definitely have a place, and they do a good job what they do. But what we've talked about before, you know, they've only been on Raw for a year, but it seems like they, you know, they've feuded with everybody on the show. So, I mean, and if they go to SmackDown, they pretty much feud with everybody on there when they were on SmackDown. Yeah. So, I don't know. You know, it's getting to the point with some of these people where they really need to start trying to get some newer, fresher names in there and mix it up. Right. Because even when you're moving them over from show to show, they're still facing the same people.
Well, they have 100,000 people on the roster. I mean, the roster is like 1998 WCW now. I mean,
well, the thing is, you know, if we get that rumor of what we've been hearing of a possible third main roster television show when it comes Fox time, that's not even counting NXT. Sure. But a third main roster show, and maybe they can start shifting people over there, then we will have a longer distance of time that people have between being against each other.
Right.
And you know what? The thing they could do is they could do a babyface turn with them.
Mm-hmm. They could.
And they could go against heels because they've always been heels. So, you know, there's that, but I don't know. But, I mean, they're at where they're at. That's all we can say right now.
Right. As far as the post-match goes, it was tremendous. Becky Lynch is the number one star in the company. She's treated as such, and she's over as such.
Obviously, yes.
I've seen a lot of people go, blah, you know, there's been some whining here and there. The last few months, people look. When you watch the show, when you look at the social media, when you look at everything they're talking about, Becky Lynch is the number one star in the company. She's treated as such. Her segments, her matches, her promos, her feuds, whoever she's up against is the most important thing going in the company. And it's been
that
way.
She got over
on
Triple H and Stephanie.
Yep. And it's been that way since about Survivor Series, wouldn't you say? Probably. Yeah, I mean, yeah. She's the person.
No, it's been that way since Naya.
Yeah, yep. You know, she's,
That was a turning point.
yep, you know, I don't want to hear any complaining about this or that or whatever, especially complaining about the women's tag titles not main eventing. Becky Lynch is
What?
a star in the company.
Yeah,
Every week
exactly.
she's got a segment. That's the most important segment on the show.
No matter where it's played.
And second of all, the women's tag, which, you know, we discussed the match. It delivered. Pretty good. I'm excited for what is to come with those tag belts. But that's a mid-card title. And it was basically built as such. There wasn't a huge, you know, hoopla build for this tag title
Hell,
champion
SmackDown just
match.
gave spots away.
Yes.
Raw at least had that you had to fight for your
So,
spots.
as far as that match main eventing, I didn't really need to.
No, it didn't. The SmackDown men needed the main
Yes,
event.
absolutely. And it earned that main event, and it needed to main event based on the outcome. And get that later. But you know, as far as this segment, yeah, when I saw Becky come out in that gear, I thought, man, that looks really familiar. Where have I seen that from? And I'm a huge Tarantino fan, and I kept thinking, man, I've seen that gear before. And obviously, it was a reverse, you know, Uma Thurman Kill Bill, like you mentioned. But I thought
Yeah.
that seems similar. And I could have been thinking of Kawada too, to be fair. But I was like, I've seen that before. And then somebody made the Kill Bill reference. I'm pretty sure that's what it was a Kill Bill shout out, which was a cool little touch, if that's the case. Yeah, this segment was great. I'm curious. I saw some people think it was silly and kind of illogical. My brother Dylan hated it, but he did enjoy the violence of the crutch shots. But I think he was
Well,
kind of
to be fair, Dylan doesn't watch
no.
TV.
And like you said as well, logic's kind of been thrown out of the window in a lot of ways.
Oh, God,
But
yes.
you know, in terms of people cheering Becky and like the people who are like, I don't understand why they're cheering her. I mean, like, you know, like she just seems like a jerk. Well, everybody likes when, I mean, everybody's gonna cheer for somebody who just doesn't do what they're supposed to be doing. I mean, everybody loves, I mean, anti-authority is the biggest
But
thing going.
it's not just that. You know, it's the fact that and they're playing the narrative up so big on the
Yes, with
story
Charlotte.
that Charlotte's the one that's the
There you
handpicked
go.
one,
Yep.
you know,
Yep.
and by Vince. So you have that going on. And then the Ronda situation is that, you know, Ronda has the rep, the track record, all this other
Right.
stuff. And Becky's trying, you know, says, I know, I'm the one that's the baddest one, you
Right.
know, not you. So
Yeah, this is, I mean, it makes
there's a
sense.
lot
I
going
get
on.
why she gets, I love Becky. I went nuts at the Royal Rumble. You know, like I it's not hard to figure out why she's being cheered. I don't know why people are just sitting there. I guess because they don't want to like WWE or something, but
Well, yeah, there's that, and there's a lot of people that just hate that Charlotte's in this match. Let me tell you something. I think Charlotte being in this match is a plus. Because it adds a whole nother drama element to the match. And it's made, I mean, think about it. All right. How much has Charlotte's promos and her character work been integral to Becky getting even more over? You
huge,
know?
huge. And another thing, I saw somebody post this, may have been on PWO, and I'm not trying to pick it because I really don't know who remember who posted it, but I saw someone post this and I thought they're wrong. They were like, well, you know, Batista shouldn't have been added to the triple threat at Mania either. No way. Batista, Bryan beating all of Evolution in the same night was huge, integral to that storyline.
Yes,
Like
absolutely.
Bryan, Batista and Orton both being in that main event was absolutely the right call. And I'm a little bit annoyed. I'll admit, you know, because I'd love to see a Becky Ronda one-on-one match. You know, I get that sentiment to a degree, but you know, Charlotte is an excellent heel. She's very hateable. She's over her over the topness is really annoying, and it works. And I think she can really create a good dynamic
in a triple threat setting. And I'm perfectly fine with that. And plus, you know, with Charlotte's involvement now, you know, I bet we'll get Becky Lynch breaking Ric Flair's arm on his birthday. So that's even, you know.
Well, see, yes, you got all that coming up where, you know, the Ric Flair birthday thing.
Be ready for a big angle, folks, on the February 25th episode of Raw. Cause
when they started plugging that three weeks early, you know something's
coming. Oh, yeah. And I don't think it's just going to be Flair. She's going to be, you know, Arn and Ricky Steamboat.
Oh, Vince is going to get something, too.
Steamboat and Arn are going to be bumping for Becky, too.
Well, Vince is going to get something.
Yep. You know, but yeah,
eventually that's gonna happen.
Those crutch shots, man, good freaking Lord.
Woof.
Apparently, I didn't catch it, but apparently Charlotte's arm was all cut to hell. Like, I mean,
well, Becky's, I mean, Rhonda's head was enough to let you know.
Yes, I mean, you good know, Lord.
And it wasn't your normal, it wasn't a normal like blade job or anything like that. Rhonda's head was completely red.
Oh yes, she
and
does.
It wasn't just blood; it was just red.
She got cracked open hard. I mean, that was just a brutal beating. Like that was a total psychotic Austin level moment there from Becky. They even did this when she was getting walked out. Someone posted a side by side photo of when Austin. I think it was when he stunned Vince, and he had the smile on his face. Becky did the same thing, which I'm sure was intentional. But
it's the same thing.
And people are mad. People are like, "Why can't Becky Lynch be her own character? Well, why do they have to copy everything?" And go, I mean, wrestling angles have been copied for decades. Who cares?
Yes.
Who gives a shit?
Everybody copies.
Like, who cares? Like. Everybody wants a new thing. Like everybody has to be their own individual thing. There's only so many, you know, things and ideas you can do. It's hard. It's not as, you know, it works. If it didn't work, it'd be one thing, but it's working. So shut up. I'm being mean, but I feel like I have a right to tell these people to shut up for once.
Well, here's the thing. Becky's going to win at Mania. And then whenever Rhonda comes back or whatever.
She will come
then
back.
Then they'll have their singles match. They'll have their singles match.
Yeah.
And it'd be even more important then. It'd be even bigger then. So this is going like that. Now, maybe the best thing about this whole thing was they started playing Baron Corbin's music to send this thing off. Oh, just amazing.
with the bloody image of Rhonda. Baron Corbin's terrible theme starts playing. Well, man, the production and the way this, good Lord.
Well, that tells you that we're that I guess they thought this was going, but that going over, but they've done this, they've done this lately. Like Raw, when Becky was in the ring and they started playing Sasha and Bayley's music, you know, Monday. And I was expecting like a little interaction there between them, but it never happened. But they've done this lately where they've started music up to end the angles that was preceding it.
It's a buzz.
It's a weird thing they're doing now.
I think it's kind of a buzzkill, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just different. Yeah.
It's not working, like, for me.
Moving right along, you know. Yeah. So anyway, we get Baron Corbin and Braun Strowman in a no DQ match, and I love Braun Strowman. Good Lord of mercy. These two guys, they've been feuding for 5 years now, and then Drew and Bobby comes out there and gets involved. They powerbomb Braun through two tables, which is an impressive spot. But Jesus Christ, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this dynamic. And the sad thing is, I think it's going to a Mania. But, man, poor Braun. Now, here's what I was talking about earlier. You know, they made a big deal about Braun not having any friends. How about Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn return as Braun's friends?
Oh, that's interesting.
And who do they have heat with here? They have heat with Lashley. So, you know, and carrying over to Corbin and Drew as well. Because Owens is definitely coming back as a babyface. I mean, that is a no-brainer, the way he's been acting.
Yes.
And Zayn, I think Zayn's got to come back as a babyface too. So them coming back to help out their old enemy Braun to take out their new enemies, I think would be really good stuff, really cute. A way of bringing them in as being the guys that, that help Braun out, because it was kind of just obvious that they're like, Braun has no friends. You know, he's been friendly with Finn and Kurt lately, but Kurt obviously wasn't there.
Right.
And Finn was busy, I guess, taking photos of him with the belt in his car. But, but yeah, I mean, this was another one of those segments that, wow, this is Monday Night Raw. It's just your average Raw segment here. And it took way too long. So, God bless Braun, but man, we got to get on to something else with this dude. Jesus.
Yeah, this is, I mean, like, it was kind of fun, but, like, it's the same thing we've seen over and over and over again. It's yes. Like, God, like, the same thing over and over. I'm tired of seeing this match. I'm tired of seeing these guys all work against you. It's the same crap over and over again.
This is proof that they need to revamp the way they do television, and they won't do it. But then they revamp the way they do television, where you don't have these guys facing off of each other on TV every week, then bring them in on the big shows in the same match.
Yes.
You got to have something where you're either, I mean, I'm not necessarily advocating, you know, all squash matches, but put guys against guys that they're not feuding with, or guys on different levels than them. I mean,
I know. It's
have a tier system where you have, all right, here's a tier guy.
There's no tier system anymore. That's a problem.
No, there's no tier system. I mean, really, I mean, just think, I mean, Braun, you got Braun work against guys like Jinder on television, you know, one week on Raw, and, you know, maybe a guy like, you know, Corbin or Drew working, like Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins right. And Paulo and guys and like that. Just flip guys right, around.
And let him win in 3 or 4 minutes, maybe have a little bit of semi-competition, but it doesn't have to be 15 minutes where they're trying to get a 3.5, 4-star match every damn week. Like,
And you had the same matches on Raw and then come back with the same match on the damn
pay-per-view. I know. I mean, for example, Finn Balor and Leo Rush, the match was good, but there's no reason that match should have gone 15 minutes, but it did. You know? Like, there's no tier system in the company. There hasn't been a tier system in WWE.
Years.
In 25 years, probably.
Yeah. And hell, if it means bringing back local talent and jobber matches, I don't got no problem with that, dude.
I don't either. You know, they were doing it for a little bit with Braun and Nia.
But yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But that segment was what it was. That's for sure. Now, this show is already looking like it's going to be going off early. We get a video package, and all of a sudden... Lacey Evans' music hits. She comes walking out, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? She turns around and walks to the back. And then we go to another bit promo package. That was simply amazing. Why? I don't know. I guess the way is like, let everybody know that I'm still here. But this seemed like a total Vince Kevin Dunn type thing right here in a lot of ways. Jesus Christ.
I want you to.
I mean, you have any thought.
Just walk out there. Come back.
I mean, is there any reason why this happened?
No, there's zero reason why it happened. Just.
Somebody noted that between the end of the previous match and the beginning of the main event, there was 22 minutes of time, which definitely could have, you know, been another match.
Right.
Now, there was Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful had said that there was going to be a U.S. title match on this show that was unannounced, but they were going to have, I guess, Truth defending against Rusev or Nakamura, one of the two. And, they didn't do it. They should have done it.
Yeah, they should have. Yeah.
So, this show was falling off a cliff kind of at this point. Because, I mean, we had the hot women's angle, but that was surrounded by, you know, this average blah stuff. Yep. Then comes the men's chamber main event. WWE title on the line here. Daniel Bryan defending against AJ Styles, Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy, Kofi Kingston, and Samoa Joe. Rowan comes out with Bryan. They send him to the back. Bryan and Joe start off, and boy, did they beat the shit out of each other. Whew. I mean, these dudes were their chests were blood red before the next guy even got in there. They were just going off on each other, which, you know, was only natural. Kofi comes in and becomes the star of the match. He's the total underdog here in every way. Now, Kofi's in this match because Mustafa Ali got hurt. So they got themselves in a spot, you know, where they had to replace Mustafa Ali. They had the gauntlet match on SmackDown on Tuesday where Kofi's in for the whole hour and gets in the match. Got him over a huge. And they're telling this story about how Kofi's been with the company for all these years and he's going to finally get his time to shine and this, that, and the other. And it's a great story they're telling. And the fans are buying it. They're into it. So we have that going on. AJ gets in there. Joe gets eliminated quickly. Joe gets eliminated right after, and not too long after AJ gets in. AJ puts the forearm on him and puts him out. And he's gone. So he got eliminated before Hardy and Orton even got in the cage. And then Hardy gets in, does his spots, including a a swanton off the pod onto AJ Styles, who is laying across the top rope cable.
Good Lord, what a spot.
Jeff Hardy is an insane human being. And here's the thing, though. Both of them acted like that didn't really hurt that bad. That's the thing. That was crazy part. Hardy hits that, and then as he gets back up, Bryan pops him with the knee. And then Hardy's out. So we have two eliminations before Randy Orton gets in there. This is the point in time where I'm secretly hoping that Bryan, Styles, and Kofi all eliminate each other before Orton even comes out of his pod. Because that would be the most Randy Orton thing ever. He comes out of his pod, and he's by himself, and he wins the match. It would just be the Randy Orton thing of all Randy Orton things. It would just be amazing. It'd be like Scenic City just did that at the Scenic City Rumble, where AC Mack won the Scenic City Rumble before even entering the ring.
Yep.
So I just thought that would have been amazing, but it didn't happen. And it's a good thing if that happened, because Randy Orton gets in there, and we get a payoff of a feud from 10 years ago. Where Kofi got his win on Randy Orton. He eliminated the Trouble in Paradise. And it was at that point that the fans were losing their fucking minds. And they stay losing their minds. As now Kofi is by himself. Now, I got to mention, though, Randy, while he was in there, hit an RKO on AJ Styles as he was going for the phenomenal forearm, which was tremendous. And I love that Randy Orton's gimmick now is he is now the world's greatest version of Positively King. But, just hitting diamond cutters and RKOs out of nowhere on people. Just bam. So Kofi and Bryan are left, and the place is just going nuts. And, man, Kofi and Bryan have a really tremendous series here. The fans are just going crazy. We get some tremendous near falls. Kofi kicks out of the running knee, which a lot of people have not done. He got out of the lapel lock, getting the ropes. They fall to the top of the pod, and that didn't happen, thankfully. And then, but Kofi dove off the top of the pod, hit all Matt, and then when he hit that, he got the knee in the face. Bryan finally gets the win. The last half of this match was simply tremendous. As good a storytelling as you can get in a match, the fans were just fully invested in Kofi Kingston. And it's amazing how simple you can do that, man. How simple a story as you can tell. And they were into it like crazy. Xavier and Big E came running out. They was kind of celebrated with Kofi in a way. And showing off with them going off into the sunset. And Kofi's a made man right now. Out of nowhere. So, your thoughts on the match itself? And I think they gotta put Brian and Kofi in the singles at Fastlane. So, what are you thinking on that one?
This match was great. I actually think it's my WWE match of the year so far. I really liked the
There you
first
go.
half. I thought Joe was incredible in this
First half was
match.
good. Yeah,
I
the first half. The first half, I'll say, was technically good, but it was kind of like the anti-women's match in a way, 'cause where the women was so
Sure. Sure.
chaotic and out of control, and this just seemed like it was very clean. The guys were doing good stuff. They're working hard, but it didn't seem, other than Brian and Joe pounding each other, it just didn't seem like it was a chamber match type
Right.
of thing. And then it kicked up, though.
That's
It did
fair.
kick up tremendously.
But I
Not, hey, just because, here, hey, thing, just because something is really good and technically good doesn't mean it's exciting.
Right. Right.
Sometimes the word, sometimes the something that's like the shits could be really exciting, you know?
Sure.
So, yeah, that's just the way
Right.
it is. But go ahead.
I really thought Joe was awesome in this match. I mean, he was caving in. I mean, he could compete with Walter for most violent chops with the stuff he was throwing at Brian's chest tonight. Good Lord. I mean, he was just murdering Brian with those chops. I really thought he was absolutely tremendous tonight. And it might have been, I mean, Joe's actually gotten really good in the ring the last 6 months, but Joe's always been great, but I think he's sort of found the way he sort of wants to work in
And
WWE, I guess.
here's the thing with Joe. Joe's a guy who he's kind of like a top tier version of Ruby Riott in that he always loses, but he's always credible, and he can always be put. But then the fans always think of him as a guy that belongs in that match
Right. Yep. Well, it
because he carries
helps.
how he carries himself too.
Yes, it's how he carries himself. He's a great promo. And I think that meant a lot to the fans when they had him just destroy Brock for a whole month before the pay-per-view match. You know, that
Yeah.
helped him, I think. Even though Brock won with one F5, laugh out loud. I think it helped him. But anyways, yeah, I thought he was amazing in this match. Brian was absolutely incredible in this. Gosh, he was good. He had an all-time performance, one of those all-time chamber performances, and Kofi as well, obviously.
Brian, I mean, how many chamber matches has Brian been in now?
Let me think about this for a second.
He's got to be one of the best chamber workers they've had.
One, two, I think this is his third.
Yeah, and the other two, he was amazing in those matches too.
Yes.
He is tremendous in the chamber.
Yep. This match was outstanding. Randy Orton was awesome. I
Oh
think
God,
Randy
love
took
him.
like two bumps. God, I
Randy
love Randy
Orton,
Orton.
Randy Orton's meta character is just amazing to me right now.
I love Randy Orton because he just comes in, hits a couple RKOs, takes one, two bumps, and then that's it. God, I
He's
love that. That's
awesome.
brilliant. That's called being a worker right there, folks.
Exactly, folks. Yes, he's old school, baby. Rip Rodgers is proud of this man.
Yes. As would our friend Bo James be as well.
Oh God, yeah. I need to ask Bo his thought. I really haven't talked to Bo about Orton. When I talk to Bo again, I'd say, Bo, what do you think about Orton, man? I mean, because Orton is a definite throwback in that way.
Yes.
God, he's great.
And of course the RKO catching Randy or AJ off the phenomenal forearm was awesome. He's beaten Randy Orton twice with the RKO, mind you, 2 times in a row. We might be getting that match. That would not shock me if that was our Mania match for AJ.
Oh, the ending of SmackDown Tuesday night was amazing.
Yes. Yes.
Because that was Kevin Dunn done right.
Right.
Because AJ looks around all of a sudden, here comes Randy flying out of nowhere with the RKO.
Yeah.
But
Positively Orton.
Yes. So I think we're going to get an AJ Randy singles match out of this. I think that's coming. And we might get it at the big one. So we'll see.
I want Randy to go to Raw in the shakeup. He's been on SmackDown the whole time. I want him to go to Raw because he'd be fresh on Raw against all the guys over there. Can you imagine Balor and Orton?
Yes, I'd love that.
Yeah, it'd be really fun.
Yeah, Randy was tons of fun in this match. You know, AJ's AJ. You know, I mean, he give him credit for taking that ridiculous Jeff Hardy spot. Jeff, yes. Of course, was Jeff and did his one crazy thing and got out of there, but he was good for what it was. Then, of course, the last 10 minutes is probably – I mean, there's been a lot of great endings to Chambers, Edge, Ray in 09, Triple H, Taker in 2009 as well, I think, Orton and Bryan in 2014. This is probably Bryan and Santino in 2012. This is probably the greatest ending to a chamber match ever. The last 10 minutes were absolutely incredible. Just absolutely tremendous false finishes, near falls. The crowd was insane and going wild for Kofi Kingston. And it was awesome. And then Kevin Dunn fucked up on a near fall. Fuck you, Kevin Dunn.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
and what could have easily been finished, by the way.
It was the SOS, right?
Well, no, it was the Trouble in Paradise.
Okay, your Trouble in Paradise of Brian
kicked out of and then went into a small package.
Yeah, and they showed and they immediately zoomed on a fan in the crowd who was just standing there watching, and then quickly cut right back. Why? During a near fall.
That got annoying. I mean, the match was amazing, but it got annoying.
That was the worst thing they've done.
And they had to show the fans' reaction. Cut out with that fucking shit. I know they want to put that in their stupid WWEshop.com because they fucking air two times a day. But that shit gets – God, that's annoying. Like, God, that's annoying. Ugh, that was angering. Man, that was annoying. But – regardless of the god awful production, this match was incredible. In the final 10 minutes, all time great chamber stuff. Kofi got the standing ovation at the end of the show. I'm with you, Chris. I think we should get a Brian Kofi singles match. I think that needs to happen, man. That's got to be the route they're going to go for Fastlane. You know, I think that's the best choice for sure.
Yeah, why not?
I'm totally for that.
I mean, Fastlane's going to be like this throwaway pay-per-view anyway, so why the fuck not?
Yeah, man. You know? give him 20.
And Kofi's somebody who, and just looking at how people tweeted out, talent tweeted out, everybody loves Kofi.
Yes.
So, and he got Kofi's been there. Jesus,
11 years, 2008.
It was 11 years. I was thinking, man, 2006-ish. So 11 years, yeah. 2008. So he's been there a long time. And you know, Kofi's a guy I always enjoy watching. But you know, I've never been one to say he was a great worker.
No. He always busts his ass. I'll always give Kofi that. I'll never say he doesn't try.
And the thing is, you know, we always talk about the Kofi Kingston Dolph Ziggler series going on forever and ever 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 and ever. And Kofi's done stuff, but he's been there 11 years and he's always been there and he's dependable. And New Day, whether you think the gimmick's old hat, it still works. People are still into it. Those guys are still over. Why not? Why not give him a favorite singles main event? Why not? You know, he deserves it. Put him in there.
Might as well make something worth out of this dumbass pay-per-view that shouldn't happen anyways.
I mean, that's that. I mean, we're not going to have the Universal title match on that show, so nope. Why not have Brian and Kofi go at it, man? So we'll see. We'll definitely see. That's Fastlane is coming up in how many weeks?
Three.
Oh.
March 10th, the first day of the time change, folks.
Oh,
we're finally getting to the point where the days are longer, thank God.
Yeah, I think it's going to be springing forward, though. So we're going to lose
that
hour.
That's true. Yeah, that does kind of suck.
On that day. So we got that. But anyway, so that's it. Show was just over 3 hours, but still ended at around 10:17. So that's going to get automatic thumbs up for me on that one, no matter what. So thoughts on the show, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, where you at?
I'm going to give it thumbs in the middle because the middle of the show sucked, outside of the women's angle. Middle of the show was just wasn't good, boring, uninteresting. Start of the show was great, end of the show was great, right in the middle.
I'm going to go slight thumbs up because the both chamber matches delivered. The Becky segment was tremendous, and they ended at 10:17. So that puts it over the top for me as a thumbs up. So I'll go that direction. So that's that. All right. That's it for us. We'll be back in 3 weeks, March the 10th, to talk about Fastlane. And the road to WrestleMania continues to bump along. So we will see you then. So for Devin, this is Christian. So long from the Peach State of Georgia.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
PlaySuite Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. And we want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySuiteNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlaySuite Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB In Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post-Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaySuiteNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySuiteNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySuiteNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.